Hi folks, this is Lauren Hunt with another episode of the Guitar Podcast. Thanks for tuning in again. This is episode number 81. For those of you new to the Guitar Podcast, I want you to know that when I talk about guitars, amps, and pedals, and music, I'm conveying my opinion from my experience and learning over the years. Please email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Check out the show notes and follow the Guitar Podcast on Facebook. That's where you can chime in with comments and such. Last but not least, go to theguitarpodcast.net and sign up for email alerts where you'll get emails notifying you when a new episode has been released and other timely information regarding the Guitar Podcast. A really easy way you can support the Guitar Podcast is if, say, you're going to buy some music on iTunes or you're going to buy some strings or something like that on Sam Ash, to go first to guitarpodcast.net and click on one of the two banners and go on about your business that way. It doesn't cost you any more. It just takes a few extra clicks. And at that point, then they're at those advertisers. Give me a little kickback and help support the show. So it'd be great if you did. If you don't, it's fine too. All right, let's get to it. You're going to hear a couple segments that I recorded while I was in my mobile podcasting studio. And so the audio is about to change for the worse. But the content's about to change for the better. So enjoy. So many of you may be familiar with the news that Fender was considering and basically was going to do an IPO or initial public offering. Basically make their stock public. And I think they were going to go on the NASDAQ under FNDR. As their ticker symbol. And when I read that, I was kind of taken back and not really terribly pleased about it. Back years ago, I used to, you know, buy and sell stocks. You know, not like a real day trader or anything, and not like a big time, you know, big time player in the stock market or anything like that. But just a little bit here and there, And I was looking for, being a guitar enthusiast, I was looking for Fender and Gibson and Paul Reed Smith or anything like that, or Marshall or something like that. And I really wasn't finding what I was looking for, of course. So I pretty much just went along with the big guys. Anyway, that aside, you know, when I saw this, had this happened, I don't know, 6 years ago, you know, I probably would have been pretty excited about it. But living in Indiana and seeing so many of the local businesses, mid-sized and up, do IPOs, I wasn't really terribly thrilled about it because I have a much better understanding of what that really means for a company. And so then I was pleased to see that for now, Fender has pulled back on that. That they're not going to do the IPO for now. Who knows? By the time this is published, they could have changed their mind and set a date and so on and so forth. But I was really glad to see that. And their reasoning behind why they weren't doing the IPO is because of the economy, basically. But when the Dow Jones is in 12,000 range, anything above, 10 years ago, anything above 10,000 was a decent economy, but right now it's not quite the same. And I think they're factoring in some things with inflation and unemployment and some other things to really quantify why that a Dow at 1,200 isn't a robust economy. I'm sure that in 2001, 2002, if we would have been at 12,000, people would have been pretty happy. But that aside, basically they're not going to do it. But I decided to pose the question out on the Facebook page and see what the faithful listeners and lookers of the Guitar Podcast Facebook page would have to say about, you know, what do you think about Fender going public, you know, should they or should they not?
And I was pleased to hear. I mean, basically, most everybody was like, no. And some of the reasons that I heard were really pretty cool. I was really glad to hear that perspective. Was, you know, one thing is usually a company goes and goes public to raise money, raise capital, to sell, you know, virtual, you know, shares of the company to people on the NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange, and you can trade it on Scottrade and E-Trade and all the other trades, and or if you want to do it on, you know, through a broker or whatever. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, the board of directors and the president, CEO, all the corporate brass is wanting to raise capital. And one of the things that was brought up by a couple of different folks on Facebook page was basically when you do that, then you're not only serving the quality isn't what your focus is. The end buyer isn't, you know, the customer isn't what your focus is. And the shareholder becomes the focus. And then cutting corners, cheaper metals, cheaper products, cheaper finishes, cheaper labor come into play. But some of the folks were already saying that, well, it's really already the case with companies like Fender and Gibson, that they've already pretty much lost their way. In some ways, maybe. I think that Fender, in a lot of ways, is serving a very broad audience, and they've done a pretty good job at that. From their Squire series guitars that you can get, you know, for around $200 or used less, you know, and their smaller amps, or their what we call practice amps or beginner amps, all the way up to your pro series stuff, your custom shop guitars, they're well into the thousands, couple thousands or more. And they have a nice broad range of products, but to get to that, you know, that good product, you really have to, you know, you have to spend the money. And now Gibson, you know, we've talked about their issues here. I know over the years they had issues with orange peel on finishes and just headstocks just spontaneously splitting from the, or peg heads, whatever you want to call it, splitting from the neck just spontaneously without being dropped. And, I mean, they, you know, to their credit, you know, if you bought it new or whatever, they just replace it. So that was kind of good, but, you know, it kind of is a bit telling about their quality control right now, or what it has been up and down over the years. And that happens with a lot of companies. You know, I kind of follow guns too, and if I look at like Remington and Winchester, two really, really big names in firearms, they've had their issues over the years too, but their two main bolt action rifles, the Model 700 and the Model 70, are considered the two best American bolt action rifles. However, even they have had ups and downs over the years, but people still look at them as the, you know, the standard for bolt action. Now, do we not look at Gibson and Fender as the standard of what we compare every other guitar company to? I think so, honestly. But when we get into, we're wanting to get that really high range, a good professional guitar like a Les Paul Standard, when we have one that just, it's got orange peel, it's, you know, the, you know, like I said, the peg head splitting away from the neck, other issues, just some quality issues, you're already paying the money and you're not really getting what you would expect at that price range. You know, when you're spending anywhere from $1,500 to $3,000 for a guitar, I mean, that's not chump change, folks. I mean, I don't need to tell you that, right? You know, us average Joes making a meager living, you know, whether we're middle class, lower middle class, or lower class, upper middle class, whatever. They're saying the middle class is a very broad range of incomes these days. I think it's just expanding because we're getting included in a lot of different... Anyway, I'm not going to get into that kind of a economic and political rant here, but it's a lot of money to be spending on a guitar, and then to find out that it's not doing so well, that it's not what you expected, it's not the quality of the performance that you're looking for. Now, I have an 87 Les Paul Custom, and I love it. I think it's great. And that's coming out of more than a decade of the Norland years when Gibson really had a bad reputation for their quality, what they were putting out, for the money people were spending on those guitars. And all I keep on seeing on the forums, anything from 87, 89, those guitars are really fairly well sought after. I've known other people who have 87, who've had 87 Les Pauls, and were very pleased with them. For some reason, that 89s seem to get a little more press, so to speak, on the forums than the 87s, but I'm very pleased with my 87. It's an awesome guitar. It's the best electric guitar I've ever owned. And I've been very happy with it, which makes me very disappointed to see some of the things that have happened with other people purchasing guitars over the years from Gibson since. You know, you'd think some of these companies would learn their lessons from the mistakes of the 70s, but they haven't. And mistakes from other companies whenever they're trying to maximize it, you know, their profit margins and so on and so forth, and sacrificing the end user. And they're sacrificing their reputation at that point. But I understand how business works, where you need to, you know, it is about the bottom line. Everybody's got to put food on the table and have, you know, the executives need to have fat salaries, right? Board of directors needs to be happy and approve. And if you have shareholders, well, they come into play too, because if the stock isn't performing, if the dividend isn't paying out, if they're not increasing the dividend, then, you know, they're not going to be happy either. They're going to be selling, and they can make a much quicker move than on that to provide feedback to a company than you know, board of directors or the executive level, managerial level. To show their disapproval, so to speak. Now then, when you're talking about... Then on the other side, though, you look at... Well, if you're spending, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 for a Gibson or a Fender at that professional range, you know, how many people are unhappy with a Paul Reed Smith whenever they play it or buy it? My findings seem to be that most people are very happy with their Paul Reed Smiths when they buy them. The quality, the level of craftsmanship, the finishes, the playability, the tone, the options you can get for all the different models that Paul Reed Smith has. It's really vast, really awesome, high level of quality. However, with that in mind, how much are you paying? Paying in that $2,000 to $3,000 range, just the same. So, I hope you get my point there, that you are kind of getting what you're paid for. But if you're paying that kind of money, don't you expect to get a high quality instrument like you get from Paul Reed Smith, or like you would expect from Gibson, and not get something that's got, you know, orange peel or splitting apart from the bottom, the neck, and so on and so forth. So, just a slight comparison there for you, so that you can just some food for thought. Because I know we tend to bash on Fender and Gibson, but whenever you look at it, if you know you say, well, you have to pay $2,000 to get a decent Strat or whatever, you know, from the custom shop. Well, don't you have to do that for Paul Reed Smith? Anyway, which leads me to another topic related to the two of the three aforementioned guitar companies. Also on Facebook, a question was posed. A listener has a Paul Reed Smith, and I think it's a 250, and it's a really cool guitar. It's not a super high-end, high-priced Paul Reed Smith. It's not one that, it's like not like a 22, custom 22, or a E or anything like that, or a McCarty or anything like that. But it's a really cool guitar, and seems very happy with it, and loves the tone and everything. But he's thinking about a Les Paul Standard in his place. And I know we've talked about this before, where you talk about the grass is greener on the other side and stuff like that, but sometimes it's not. And my point of view is, if you're happy with the guitar you have, and you know the reputation of Paul Reed Smith as opposed to what's gone on with Gibson over the years, and what's going on with Gibson right now, for crying out loud, why would you want to take that chance with a company that's somewhat uncertain, as opposed to a company where the man who puts his name on the guitar is the face of the company and feels very strongly about his instrument, his company, his name, his brand, the quality, the craftsmanship, the tone, that he's right there. No, it's not a board of directors publicly traded company that's, the bottom line is everything. Paul Reed Smith, like Taylor, it's all about quality and tone, playability. And so I lean towards the thinking of sticking with the Paul Reed Smith as opposed to taking the chance with the Gibson, honestly. And I don't even have a Paul Reed Smith. I'm a Gibson guy, for crying out loud. But, you got to look at it for what it is. Have something that really has the tone that you're looking for, has the playability, has the reputation, is everything you're looking for. It's just not a Gibson. But that might not be such a bad thing. Then the next question that came up in that conversation had to do with increasing value of the Paul Reed Smith and keeping up with the Les Paul Standard. And I didn't quite follow his question so much, because I doubt if there's ever going to be a guitar that's ever going to keep up with the appreciation or the value of a 58 or 59 Les Paul Standard. It just doesn't seem possible or logical. Just like an interview with Bob Taylor, when they were talking to him about his earliest Taylor guitars, if they would have the value of pre-war Martins, and he was like, absolutely not. And I would have to say that would play into Paul Reed Smith guitars too, the early ones. Some of them are pretty expensive, but are we talking like $500,000? I don't think we'll see that from him. And Taylor, he was like, I'm very proud of my guitars, but he says he's very proud of his guitars, but he can't see that they would be of the value of that golden era of Martin guitars, the pre-war Martin guitars. And of course, how did Taylor come about? They basically cannibalized a bunch of those Martin guitars to look at their X-bracing. It's basically the same X-bracing they did, that Martin did, Taylor's doing now. So, I don't know, if you're looking at the value of a guitar or whatever, you're playing the stock market just the same, and it's a tougher thing to sell off whenever you have a unrealized gain and you want to sell it. Whereas the stock market, if you say like have an E-Trade or a Scottrade account. Say you've bought into Ford when it was like $6 a share, and it's like $12 a share, and you want to capitalize on some of those gains. You can just put in a sell, and sell it and realize it within a matter of minutes. Whereas if you, you know, spend a couple thousand dollars on an electric guitar or a guitar in general, and you realize, you know, the double digit growth or a 200% gain on the purchase, you have to find the buyer. So I don't know that I necessarily look for guitars as a long-term for an investment. Maybe a long-term investment, something to pass on to your kids, grandkids, and things like that. But as far as, I mean, we fall in love with these things. This wood and steel and electronics and everything, the tone, the feel, we fall in love with these guitars. And then to think that, oh, well, I just sell it. You know, I mean, some people don't really care about them in the way that some of us do. That, you know, like my Les Paul, I won't sell that thing. I love it. That thing is magnificent. And that cheap old granddad guitar that I have, it's, you know, it's worth basically, it's a pawn, you know, basically something you can find in a pawn shop for $50 or less. And, I mean, it's relatively no value, but it's not going anywhere because I love it. I mean, there's something really special about that thing. So I would say that I would think that the Paul Reed Smith over the years would do better. That Paul Reed Smith would do better over a same period of time than like say if you bought a Paul Reed Smith today. Comparatively priced Paul Reed Smith to a Les Paul Standard today, and you took them both and watched them over the next several decades, I would have to presume that the Paul Reed Smith would hold its value, if not gain its value, better than the Les Paul Standard, just because the quality that we know is there with Paul Reed Smith, as opposed to what we know is going on with Gibson. So if that's what you're looking for, then that's my answer to that. But as far as like keeping up with those golden era Les Pauls, no way. And I know that even some of those 70s Les Pauls are getting into what I kind of consider a ridiculous price range, considering that it's Norlin years and not as well sought after, but there people are considering them vintage guitars. And of course, I know, yes, Randy Rhoads played a 1974 Les Paul Custom, which is probably a pancake guitar with the volute and probably weighed, you know, 12 pounds. And he weighed all of maybe 120 pounds. But still, you know, the point is that, you know, it doesn't always make sense the way they value guitars or what people are paying for guitars. The value always winds up being what somebody is willing to pay for it, whether the book says it's valued, what its value is or not. So I hope that helped out everybody on that conversation, and I hope it helped you out if you were just listening. And if you agree or disagree with any of these comments, either one of these topics, whether it's the Fender IPO or the Paul Reed Smith versus Gibson conversation, jump on the Facebook page and find those two conversations. It won't be tough to find. And jump in and chime in, you know, join the conversation. All right, so we just got back from our vacation in Michigan, family vacation. Everybody shows up, basically, from my side of the family, of course. And it was great. It was a nice time, just kind of chilling out and swimming and playing some golf, frisbee golf. Actually, I wasn't playing golf because my shoulders messed up. And just enjoying time with the mom and dad and my wife and my sisters and brother-in-laws and nieces and nephew, and it was really great. When deciding, initially, our main plan usually is on the way home that we go a little bit out of the way and we run up to Lansing to Elderly Instrument and check out, you know, so I spend about an hour or so there, and I always look forward to that, and I was looking forward to it this year too. But about Wednesday or Thursday, I just started thinking, you know, it might, I don't know if I want to do that, maybe I just want to head on home. And, you know, I couldn't really make up my mind, but Thursday night, Friday morning, I was pretty much there. I was like, you know, this has been a really nice vacation. It hasn't been full of stress or anything like that, and the drive was pretty smooth. That, you know, instead of heading east on 94 to Lansing, let's just go on home, and it was nice to be home. And that's one of the nice things about vacation. I love vacation. I love getting away and things like that, but sometimes vacation makes me like home a lot. You know, we moved out to the country a couple years ago, and that was one of the things. It's like, I'm pretty happy just staying there, honestly. I mean, you can tool around with my guitars or whatever, or in the backyard, the garden, and just do whatever. So, but yeah, no report from my visit to Elderly Instruments this year. But I would like to say that, you know, those of you on Facebook who've checked out, who've seen the photos of my great grandpa's guitar, it's old slot head. It's almost I would pretty much call it a parlor guitar, and because it's not quite 3/4 scale. It's got 12 frets. I don't know, maybe it's a 12 fret parlor guitar. I don't know what really constitutes being called a parlor guitar or being called a 12 fret, but it only has 12 frets that are easily accessible without, you know, trying to wrench your wrist over to make fret notes up over the body of the guitar where the fretboard goes over the body. Anyway, it is a little narrower, so I never really thought that anything different of that guitar until I got it home and hung it up on the wall and looked at it compared to the other guitars, and I was like, you know, that it's smaller than the other guitars, and I mean, certainly it's going to be smaller than my Taylor, because my Taylor's a dreadnought. But it looked smaller in some ways than a concert or a grand auditorium style like Taylor guitar, and so I started asking. I asked a good friend of mine what he thought, and he's like, yeah, I think it's a boutique, not boutique. Why do I keep wanting to say boutique? It's not boutique, and it's a parlor guitar. Anyway, so like I said, it was my great grandpa's. Willis Hunt and his guitar, and then it became my grandfather's, Marvis Hunt's, and it was his for the longest time until he passed away, and it was passed on to my uncle Marion, and then earlier this summer I was visiting my aunt and she gave it to me, and it meant a whole lot, really. The first meaningful guitar chords and songs or things that really stuck with me, where I felt like I was really learning, were taught to me by my grandpa Hunt on that guitar. And some of the things, he had an old Roy Clark book from the 70s that had a bunch of songs in there, and then like stickers with numbers that would go on, that you could put on the fretboard to show you where to put your fingers for certain chords, you know, and I remember those being on. He put those on that guitar for me to learn, and the guitar is not terribly easy to play, but you know, I still reinforced the use of those chords and the correct fingerings, and then I learned with the help of my dad and grandpa, I learned a song called Wildwood Flower, and another one called Under the Double Eagle. And those are the songs that basically, whenever I play those on that particular guitar, the tone and everything and the memories just start flooding back. And anyway, that guitar, you know, I don't know how long my great-grandpa had it. I have to imagine that guitar is at least 100 years old, if not more. There's no name on it. It's been rebuilt. worked on by my grandpa. And so, I would have to think that it was the guitar that my grandpa learned to play guitar on as well, because it's the only guitar I know that he had other than a classical acoustic. And, but how it relates to this vacation is usually I take my Taylor with me up on vacation and play songs there that way. But this time I thought, well, this guitar is smaller, it would travel easier, and, you know, it would be a pleasant surprise for the whole family to see it and hear it and enjoy it this trip up. The only risk being that, you know, it's basically an irreplaceable guitar, in my opinion, and means so much because, you know, I'm the fourth generation of Hunts to own the guitar. But I took it up, and the first night of playing, you know, I brought it down, and everybody was surprised to see it, and a lot of big smiles around. And then two of my nieces learned some good songs on it. They played on it, and my sister took a photo of it, and that makes five generations in my family learning to play some guitar, learning guitar songs on that guitar, which is really pretty special. And it goes right back into that legacy of guitar within a family. You know, if you have something like that, you want to, I recommend holding on to it, cherishing it, and passing it on down the line to the next generation for them to learn early on, so that they have that, you know, that memory. And anyway, it was really cool for me to show them some songs on that guitar and on their guitars. And you know, like I said, the guitar is not really terribly easy to play, but it's not like a killer. But whenever you get up to some higher fret, anything basically beyond like the fourth or fifth fret, it's kind of difficult. But it's the shorter scale makes it easier. I have 11s on the guitar, so it makes it a little bit easier and less tension on it. So it's not going to be folding up too much more. Hopefully not. But since it has that nice string height, it has a whole lot of mid-range too, because of its shape and the kind of wood it's made of. Who knows what it's made of? And so I tuned it to DAD GBD tuning for slide, and it sounds awesome that way. I love it. I have a 30s Oahu square neck guitar that's meant for slide, like kind of like laying on your lap and playing slide guitar on it. And it's fun and cool and everything, but this one projects more and sounds better, in my opinion. And of course, it has that family history involved with it, to the point where I think the Oahu may be on the selling block. So anyway, I played like that, and my brother-in-law came down a couple nights later with his harmonica, and we played some blues and had some fun that way. And that was really cool. It was really nice. And then he had, I guess he has several C harmonicas. And my daughters were down there. And some of these harmonicas, they might have like some dead reeds or whatever. But, you know, when you're talking about a 2- and a 4-year-old, I mean, they're not going to care. So he just gave them two of his extra C harmonicas. And they were thrilled, and they just love them, and they're playing them all the time. And not super loud or anything or annoying, but it's cool because they're both C's, so one's playing one thing, and the other one, they sound in tune, and they're making music together. It's really pretty cool, and it was really pretty special. And, of course, then I'm standing there playing guitar, sitting on the steps playing guitar, and they're blowing on those harmonicas in C, so I'm playing in C, and or I'm, you know, playing in let's see, I want to say G for that, for blues. So I'd be playing G, C, and F. And it was a whole lot of fun. So I wanted to share that with you all. But that something else came up that my brother-in-law just offhand said, "Hey, are you familiar with C6 Steve?" And I said, "Well, yeah, man. I love Cut My Wings. That's a great song. I love it." And he said, "You know Walking Man?" And I said, I think so. I know. I bought the album, so yeah, but I always listen to Cut My Wings over and over and over and over again." And he goes, "Walking Man's my favorite." So we pulled it up on YouTube, and we're watching it, and I'm like, "Wait a minute. His guitar is just exactly like, well, without its modifications, of course, it's the same guitar as my grandpa's." Now, if you're unfamiliar with C6 Steve, he's an old dude, plays blues on cheap guitars, basically pawn shop guitars, guitars that, you know, you pay $50 or less for, and gets, you know, he has a great ear for tone and blues and songwriting, and it's really cool. But the guitar he has is, it's basically that old slot head with a pickup thrown in the sound hole. And he plays slide on it, and it sounds really awesome. And I'm like, that is so cool that we basically have the same guitar. And it pretty much blew my mind. So I'm going to post on the show notes page. Basically, I'm going to embed the video on the show notes page of Walking Man Blues by C6 Steve. And you can see that guitar, and you can judge for yourself if it's the same guitar. I thought, that looks the same, and then I saw the tailpiece, and it's the same thing. I was just amazed by it. It was really, really cool for me.
So that pretty much wraps it up for today's episode of the Guitar Podcast. Hope you liked it. Hope you enjoyed it. Please email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. And comment on Facebook. If you like what you heard today and subscribe using iTunes or Zoom, please let them know by writing a review. Thanks for tuning in again. This is Warren Hunt signing off for the Guitar Podcast.